This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions can be sent to us via radio program at AOL.com. And of course, a Q&A with Layla would not be Q&A with Layla without Layla, who is our nutritionist. I like saying Layla. It's a good song name, and it's a good name. Layla is, of course, a registered dietitian, and she has a master's degree in the field of nutrition. We work together on a daily basis, helping patients at our practice in New York City, as well as collaborating on podcasts. So, before we get to podcasts, interesting study that suggests when it comes to strokes, it's not about the yolks. Don't seal it. I made that up. It's copyrighted.
It's copyrighted. Okay.
Copyright infringement.
Yeah.
Plagiarism. So, yeah. I know it's tempting to steal that headline, but let's go look at the underlying study. What the study comes to us from University of Eastern Finland. Now, you might say, well, Finland, that's not the hotbed of nutrition. Hmm. But actually it is. Finnish nutrition
is... They have a nice fatty diet.
They have a fatty... Well, they also have a lot of nutrition studies because the diet of Finns was highly atherogenic.
Mm. And not included...
And they were smoking, they were drinking...
It was, on Ansel Keys's list of 22... Wait, or were they listed?
Were they listed among the countries? You can't say that they were among the countries that were protected against cardiovascular disease, because they had very high. Anyway, they did a lot of they really specialize in nutritional research, especially when it comes to cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. So, a new study from Finland shows that a moderately high intake of dietary cholesterol or consumption of up to one egg per day. Perish the thought.
One egg.
Oh my goodness!
Whole egg.
I've exceeded my threshold already because I had two for breakfast.
Me too.
is not associated with an elevated risk of stroke. Now, here's the interesting part. What do you do with somebody who has the APOE4 gene? Okay, the APOE4 gene, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is a dread gene that we can now test for.
Yes.
That if you have one copy of about four times the risk of Alzheimer's, if you have two copies simultaneously, you have a much higher risk of accelerated cognitive decline, cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. It's a bad gene, APOE. Have you had yours tested?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I am APOE3, so I have none of that, so that's good. So what the interesting thing in the study, no association was found in carriers of the APOE phenotype. So what used to be said is that individuals with APOE4 have to be exceedingly careful about cholesterol. Maybe they're candidates for a vegan diet.
Yeah. But no, there was a study recently, and we talked about it on an earlier podcast some months ago. I'm trying to recall who did the study, but they found that in the setting of a low-carb diet, this risk factor of the dreaded APOE4 was remediated.
Right. So what we're going to do, when we encounter patients with the APOE4, and by the way, Dr. Perlmutter speaks to this extensively because his father had Alzheimer's, and I believe he's a carrier.
Yes.
He's a carrier. So his solution is to go very low carb.
Yeah.
Ketogenic diet.
and which includes animal protein and cholesterol, but he's not that worried about the cholesterol.
Right.
And rightly so, according to the study. No association was found in carriers of the ApoE phenotype, which affects cholesterol metabolism, and it turns out to be common among the Finnish population.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I recently attended a genetics workshop where we studied the ApoE4 gene, and the conclusion was people who carry the ApoE4 gene, when we start doing genetic testing more, will detect that. They will do well on a very low-carb ketogenic diet.
Yes.
For brain protection.
For brain protection, yeah. And guess what? You've got so many benefits from that yolk. The choline, which your brain needs.
Right.
The cholesterol, which your brain needs.
Not to mention the lutein, lecithin, which your macula
yes.
needs for your preventing
the
macular
lutein,
degeneration.
Zeaxanthin. It's yep. got vitamin A. It's got smaller amounts of vitamin D. I mean, it's
B vitamins.
It's like a superfood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for strokes, don't nix the yolks. Was that what you said, Dr. Avila?
When it comes to strokes, it's not about the yolks.
It's not about the yolks.
But you know,
good.
Yours is equally good. All right, so.
Okay.
Let's get to questions.
Oh, okay.
Radioprogram@AOL.com
yes.
is the destination for questions. If you want to email us your question, feel free.
Yes. This comes from Trudy. Trudy says, the turmeric train has left the station. With so many different variations and brands available, which brands or types are best absorbed for max benefits? Well, we know that turmeric needs some fat, the way carotenoids need some fat, to be absorbed properly.
Right.
So there are different, you know, there are different formulations depending
so
on.
So there's the liposomal delivery system
mm-hmm.
that helps to the uptake.
Yeah.
And so we like the liposomal
yes.
Curcumin. There's one made by Integrative Therapeutics, Theracurmin.
Theracurmin, yes.
Which purports to be more bioavailable, but there's mm-hmm. sort of like the curcumin wars
yeah.
where each will, you know, produce studies which shows theirs the most bioavailable. When it comes to intestinal problems, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, I don't even want liposomal. I want it just free concentrated curcumin.
Yes.
To hit the source.
Mm-hmm.
There's cogumin.
There's cogumin.
Cogumin, which is thought to be.
Very good for brain.
Right, thought to be more bioavailable to the brain. That's a product you can find at FullScript.
Mm-hmm.
You can, things we mentioned, go to drhoffman.com. Or
there's golden milk, which could be a nice. Treat?
Which is a way, but it, again, that's not concentrated. It's not made more bioavailable.
Yeah.
Just curcumin.
Yep. Yep.
But we know that the Indian population, which consumes a lot of curry, which is made in part with turmeric and not even raw curcumin,
yeah.
They are protected somewhat from Alzheimer's disease. So there must be some absorption, and it's a matter of getting it day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, we want to look for the most bioavailable forms.
Yeah.
The criticism of curcumin has been that it's not that bioavailable. It doesn't reach the brain or cross the blood-brain barrier. But apparently that's not the case because there are studies which show that curcumin has an effect on depression.
Yes. Yes.
As an inflammatory disorder mm-hmm. of the brain.
Right. And that turmeric is very, very, can be helpful, according to the research, in even the shrinking of tumors. I think these were primarily rodent studies.
Yep.
But they're very promising, and they're several years old now.
Yep.
But they've been looking at all of that. So it is promising. Trudy, you know, pick the one that you, depending on its use, cogumin for brain, the first one that you mentioned, Dr. Hoffman, the
liposomal.
The liposomal one. There's the golden milk as well. There's Curcuzorb that we have on. Full script as well.
And by the way, the golden mm-hmm. milk is a powder that you can, and one of the ways to have it is you can add it to coconut milk if
yes.
you're allergic to dairy.
Nice fatty source.
I've had that as a nice warm
yeah.
anti-inflammatory drink. And that's really good for patients with gastrointestinal disorders, I would
mm-hmm.
imagine. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because coconut milk is on the SCD diet.
Yes.
And unless mm-hmm. it's made with some ingredients, suspect ingredients like guar gum or something.
Right.
You can make an anti-inflammatory cocktail.
Right.
Anyway, so you know, it sounds like we're dodging the question, and there are many opportunities here. I haven't really made up my mind that there is one definitive curcumin that is
yeah.
superior to all the others.
Right.
The curcumin wars will continue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you, Trudy, for your question. Let's see. This comes from Brad. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I am a fit 48-year-old male. I'm 5'9", 160 pounds. My exercise of choice is natural weight training, bodybuilding. My fitness goal is to add muscle. I recently began intermittent fasting to assist in maintaining optimal health. My question involves the timing of my workouts. Should I train in a fasted state and then have my first meal of the day? Or should I break my fast with a meal or two before my workouts? Thank you for providing such a great show. It depends, Brad, are you a morning person? Do you prefer to work out then or later in the day?
It does depend. But, you know, I will say, I mean, there are a lot of studies on this, and we've gone back and forth on this. Mm-hmm. Some studies say that people are stronger and more metabolically efficient for weightlifting in the afternoon. I personally don't find that the case. I find that I'm best early in the morning, and I, you know, pay it forward, I get it done, and then I do my day. What I like to do is I like to get up in a fasted state, exercise, and I may have some water, usually not a lot of sugar unless I'm going for a long distance on my bike.
Yeah.
You know, really long distance, you know, more than a 2-hour workout. I really try to do workout fasting because I think what it does is it actually helps to burn fat.
Yeah.
And the goal of a lot of, you know, bodybuilders is to have a nice fat to lean composition.
Yeah.
You know, shredded look.
Right.
And so what is important, however, is after a workout is to have adequate protein to, especially for strength training.
Yeah.
Replete the muscles. Give amino acids back to your muscles so that the muscles can reconstruct
and
themselves.
And there's a good 45 to 60 minute window after your workout to hit that optimal.
Right.
To hit that.
Right. And then the other thing is there are some studies that suggest that branched chain amino acids or whey protein at bedtime can also help with repair because a lot of repair happens at night.
Yeah.
So you could have, you know, like a snack of a whey protein or something like that, or branched chain amino acid formula rich in, you know, the branched chain amino acids, which are leucine, isoleucine, and valine, right?
Yes. Yes, those are the branched chain amino acids. Very beneficial. They're also found in your food. Brad, I just want to say some people, no matter what, they're not morning people. They hate to exercise in the morning, but they've got loads of energy in the afternoon. So it depends on you.
And it's probably genetic. There is even a gene associated with
you.
That. Some of it's habit, and some of it's, there appears to be the morning gene. You know, right?
Right. So, and it's important, the intermittent fasting that you're doing is very important. And if you are doing it that way, it's best then to get up and work out in your fasted state. Go have a really good breakfast. Go have a 3 or 4 egg omelet.
And you know what I find is that sometimes, you know, I'm puttering around or I'm waiting for the pool to get less crowded because I know there's a rush hour. So I wait a little longer on a day that I'm not, you know, needed in the office where I have an unstructured day. And I start getting hungry. And I think, you know, I need to have a little snack or something. I say, no, I forge on.
You have to wait a full hour before you go swimming.
I drink.
Remember that rule?
Right. No, you'll die. You know, it's like.
You'll seize up and you'll drown.
That's what I thought. Yeah, you know, that's the way.
That's what we all thought.
Right,
we were all told that.
It's like you've got to wait.
You can't go to the beach.
It's
now.
Only 48 minutes.
You just had lunch.
You have to wait an entire hour.
But mom. Yeah.
I know. So that whole thing. But so I will forge ahead and I'll have like some black coffee. You know, maybe put some coconut cream in it or something just for flavor, and a couple of calories. And then I'll work out. And when I work out, I forget that I'm hungry. And then at the end of the workout, I'm not ravenous. It's almost like I did a reset. So it's actually sort of a hedge against hunger. Where the hunger comes in is during that 45 to 50 minutes.
Exactly. That hunger does not happen right away after exercise.
Right.
I believe that's for most people.
That's for
myself included.
You're adrenalized during
exercise.
Yeah,
you're adrenalized. You're not hungry yet. Whereas before, you might have been starving,
right,
as you described. But then after a while, you'd be like, oh, wow, now I'm hungry.
Yeah, I could eat like a house on fire.
Exactly.
And then that's the time to replete because your body is demanding it.
Yeah. All right. So, Brad, there's your answer. Keep up the great work on your health.
Answers, plural.
Yeah, answers.
Alternatives.
Right. Okay, we have an email.
Can't we just give like a straight answer? Like everything is like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Everything's nuanced in this.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Herpanosine Skin Support. Your skin is your largest organ. Treating and preventing serious, unsightly, and at times painful skin problems must be done from the inside. That's why for over 28 years, people worldwide have experienced safe and positive results with the award-winning vitamin formula Herpanosine Skin Support. Herpanosine utilizes the finest quality gluten-free non-GMO vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, as well as antioxidants. 11 powerful and proven ingredients which work together synergistically to support skin health from the inside out where it counts. It's manufactured in an FDA-licensed facility, and it's backed by science. Healthy skin starts from within. Get Herpanosine Skin Support online at diamondformulas.com or by calling 888-467-4200. Use the coupon code Hoffman for free shipping at diamondformulas.com or call 888-467-4200. Herpanosine Skin Support.
This comes from Diane. I had my ovaries removed 5 years ago. At that time, I worked out quite a bit and ate healthy for many, many years. Never did think I'd run into this problem of being overweight and not being able to lose anything but 3 to 4 pounds. I'm seriously desperate. Do you have any advice for me? Strenuous exercise is something I cannot do. Bad knees. Walking and doing core work is doable. Help. Diane, we don't know what age you are, but you had your ovaries removed.
This is a common finding. And so we take from the veterinary world. Mm-hmm. Be careful with my pronunciation because I know we have a grammar Nazi here. You know. So in the veterinary world, you know, it's most pet owners will note the phenomenon of a sort of a lean, lively female dog going a little bit to pot after being spayed. And what that entails is that there's a little bit of energy in your energy economy that's due to, that is associated with reproduction and hormonal cycling.
Yeah.
And that may be 10-15% of your energy allocation. Mm-hmm. And then you eliminate that. And you're eating the same amount, and in your thermodynamic equation for energy, although that's not, you know, a perfect way to explain weight gain,
right?
Because not just calories in, calories out, but there's a little bit of a metabolic slowdown associated with menopause, or especially oophorectomy, which is more radical than menopause, because in menopause you still have ovaries that put out a little bit.
Yeah, but not the entire amount anymore. The other thing is, I wonder what having her ovaries removed, if it did a number on her thyroid, hypothalamus, that whole axis, the HPA.
The other thing is, the ovaries don't just make estrogen and progesterone.
Yeah.
They do make a little bit of DHEA, and sometimes that could be a factor that alters the fat-to-lean ratio.
Yeah.
And that's why men tend to have the ability to retain more muscle and be more shredded and have a six-pack than women, because they have a lot more androgens.
Yeah.
Androgens tend to build muscle and retard fat.
Right. And, you know, it's quite common that hypothyroidism in women often happens around menopause or so.
So you have to check other things with her.
So we
can't just blame it on, but it,
no.
there's this is a phenomenon, and just merely giving hormone replacement therapy doesn't always fix it.
Yeah.
So we don't know anything about her diet.
No. She's ate healthy for many, many years.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever that means. We don't know what that
means. I wish
means.
I had a buck for everybody who eats healthy, who eats, you know, whole grain cereal for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And you
skim
know,
milk.
And has whole grain muffins and skim milk and orange juice and, you know, that kind of thing.
Like, right. Beans and rice for dinner. Avoiding meat or something like that.
Yeah. beans, rice, and, you know, cheesy beans, rice, and cheese for, you know.
Right, right. So, Diane, you would need a workup, really, more than anything. You would just need a workup to find out what else is going on here and the impact that that surgery is.
You know, and I got to say, there's some insights to be gained from genetic testing, which we will be making available in our practice.
Yeah.
Because there are a whole variety of genes, I mean, literally hundreds, but we can select a few that are important for obesity, and we can hone in on them, because certain ones govern snacking behavior, certain ones are associated with satiety, certain ones are associated with just metabolic slowdown, some are associated with sensitivity to carbs, some are associated with sensitivity to fats. You know, we can, based on that, it's early now. We're not in an era yet where it's like, this is your gene makeup and this is your diet. But we can begin to make some plausible associations, get people in better programs.
Which is very exciting. More precision.
Precision medicine.
Precision medicine.
Yep.
Yes. All right. Diane, best of luck to you. Thank you for your email. Oh, we've got an email here from Ed. A question for Dr. Hoffman, my fellow gym enthusiast. There were stories in the media a few years ago warning us about MRSA skin infections contracted gyms and health clubs.
I saw that Seinfeld episode where George Costanza is outraged because the people don't wipe down their workout station.
Right, on their Nautilus equipment, right?
Right, right.
In between.
But he gets outed.
That's just rude.
He gets outed because he pees in the shower.
I remember that episode.
Right? So he's a hypocrite.
He's a hypocrite, right, right. Oh, my goodness.
So this is not that new.
So, MRSA at the gym. Was the danger exaggerated? Anything special you do in the gym to protect yourself?
The answer is I grab a towel and I use a towel when I sit on a surface in the gym.
Good idea.
However, I mean, I'm not utterly fastidious about it. It could be part of my body touches, you know, the part of the surface that has not been.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't wipe down every piece of equipment after I work out on it. Maybe that's something we should do. What we do is generally in spin classes where we really sweat a lot.
Yeah.
We, after class, part of the etiquette, and some people follow it and some people don't, is to go to the, there's like a little, these alcohol towel dispensers. You know?
Oh, right. It's these, like the purifier.
It's not Purell. There's one for your hands, Purell, but there's also like little alcohol doused towelettes. And we take a few and we wipe down our bike surfaces because we know we sweated on them. And you're going to sit on that, you know. And so that's something that I think should be part of gym etiquette.
Yes.
So, you know, you can't be sure that the last person who used it is, you know, did that. So maybe you want to swab down your bike before you sit on it so it doesn't transmit a, you know, an infection to your groin. And then you start verging on becoming a germaphobe, you know, which is also not good.
Right.
You know, because...
And maybe we need those germs so our immune systems have something to do.
And then there's also the
bring back the helmets.
The possibility of antibiotic resistance that we're fostering by using too many disinfectants.
Yes. Yes. I would think that would be more worrisome.
Right.
Than it, you know. And we all need to grow up on around farm animals.
Right.
Apparently. Or something.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess I'm not particularly focused on that concern.
I've not been seeing any headlines about more MRSA being found at the gym or anything like that. I've not seen anything like that.
Flesh-eating bacteria, you know, those headlines from 10 years ago. It doesn't seem to be that much of a problem. And I mean, I think also it depends on your own immune system.
Yes.
Because
ultimately, it's the host.
It is the host. And so keeping your immune system strong by whatever means you can, good diet, nutrition, exercise.
Sleep. Sunshine, vitamin D, especially now, very important. So,
The one problem that I can be susceptible to, I mean, it's a little bit of a, maybe too much information disclosure, but if you ride long distances on a bike, really long distances, the seat is narrow and hard.
Yeah.
And there's a certain amount of
after a while.
There's a certain amount of chafing, and occasionally you can get a saddle sore.
Oh.
And a saddle sore is enough to, you know, kind of take you out a little bit out of commission for riding, you know, because it's painful to ride because it is like a little ulceration that you get on your perineum, or in the ischial bones. The ischial bones are these little hard bones that are underneath. And, you know, so
the sits bones, as I think I call them.
Yeah, the sits bone. Yeah, it's the sits bone. And so, what I sometimes will do, I use a padded, you know, bike shorts, and they actually have, antimicrobial pads, some of the better ones, that have something in them that retards the growth of bacteria. Because yes, you should wash them, but you know, also you want to retard the growth of bacteria. And the other thing is there are certain types of creams that cyclists use that are lubricating creams that may also contain sometimes some herbs that are antimicrobial. And those are, I mean, that's, I mean, I think most people say, what are you talking about? But cyclists who are listening to this, who spend a lot of time,
who are
do
really
a lot of mileage, they are familiar with this phenomenon of saddle sores. And saddle sores are
not the, just for cowboys.
Right. Right, no, but that's the origin of it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I see those guys, you know, on the, in those Westerns, and I go, man, those guys need a good proctologist, you know, because they're on the horse and they got, I mean, talk about sitting on a cactus, you know, that's got to be painful.
Yeah. Wow.
I once did a routine, this is like 20 years ago on the radio. And I did it with, like, you know, a Western accent, frontier proctologist. And I did this whole routine about, you know, and so I got, after I did this, I got called into the office of the program director because he said it was a little bit too off color. Now, this is at the very same time that you have people emerging like Howard Stern and all this. So, like, my little foray into mild humor that was a little eschatological got me a lecture from the program director at my radio station. So, I, you know, it's like it was a little risque to talk about these things. Now you can talk about whatever you want. You know, it's like...
Oh, my. So, saddle sores are not just for cowboys. All right. So, Ed, don't be so concerned about MRSA, but let's talk about MRSA a little bit because it was a recent finding that going back to the old traditional ways... like honey, Manuka is a powerful antimicrobial and has been found to be effective against...
I absolutely use Manuka cream on sores and you know, these kind of mild irritations. It's very healing.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
Very, very helpful.
We have a brand of Manuka cream that we like to use, but it's not on Fullscript. It's you order it from another source. But I order literally cartons of that stuff.
Yeah. And it's terrific stuff.
I give it to... you know, family members who have kids, you know, kid diaper rash, things like that. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful stuff.
Okay. We got to go to part two.
Oh,
so
my.
Our time is limited for each side of this discussion. We are going to go to part two. What are we going to hear about in part two?
Why does my husband fall asleep after he eats anything in any amount? Whoa.
He doesn't love you. It's like, get out of that, lazy boy. Okay. You good for nothing.
All right. Bum.
So, when we return, we're going to address that phenomenon. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, our weekly Q&A with Layla.